Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.
Welcome to Show Me Missouri, History of Missouri, one county at a time. We are back in my home area in southeast Missouri this week at the very historic Scott County Courthouse. Scott County was formed on December 28, 1821, the 30th county formed, named for John Scott, the first delegate and the first member of Congress from Missouri. 426 square miles of some of the most productive farmland you're ever going to find right here in the corner of southeast Missouri, right on the river. And we are joined here by Tyler Bruns with the Missouri Farm Bureau. Thank you so much for having us.
Glad to be here.
Jamie Berger, the state senator everybody's going to know of. You've served in this very courthouse that we're sitting in, right?
I served 18 years in this courthouse, 12 years as presiding commissioner. We were the ones that remodeled the interior of the courthouse.
Did you ever get to tell somebody you weren't paving their road and have them leave happy?
Yeah, exactly. Several.
Yeah, I bet that's right. Several. We are joined by Alan Seaball, the county clerk. Thank you so much for having us here. We sure appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
And then the Bailey family. Bill Bailey, thank you so much for sticking around with us.
Oh, not a problem.
And Susan Bailey, who has brought some terrific photographs. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for this history you brought with you.
Oh, sure.
Let's start off talking about before folks that look like me came here. This was dominated by the Osage, but I've read a lot where the Delaware and the Shawnee were in this area too. Now, Susan, did you bring some pictures of the mounds? Or I always think it's so interesting. You can always find that we used to go Arrowhead out where I'm from. You go do watermelons, and then you go down the Walkton rice levees, and you go Arrowhead hunting. Did you mention there's some mounds around here?
For sure. There's two that I know of. One is on the National Register in some secret enclosed place, and then another drive by it every day, right on Highway E. Just east of Highway 55, and those landowners even have a spot at the top of that mound where they do not till or farm it, and you can see a stake with some Indian feathers off of it, and that's just a huge connecting point with the past.
That's awesome that they maintain that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then living in Commerce, Commerce is known for the Commerce Petroglyph. That is an Indian rock that is known as possibly the first map ever created in the United States. It was done by the Mississippian culture back when they were thriving. It's been connected to the Cahokia Mounds near St. Louis. Possibly the Cahokians came down the Mississippi, used that as a navigational map, obtained their clay in the Commerce area, which was known for its potteries back then. And then they would take that clay back to Cahokia, make their urns and things. They've discovered Commerce clay in their artifacts.
Boy, I'd rather be taking that clay downstream as back upstream. Well, that'd be... I've dug through that clay where I'm from. That's heavy stuff. That ain't nothing to mess with.
Yeah, can you imagine in whatever they floated that in, canoes and rafts and whatever?
I can't imagine paddling against the river to start with, but with a big load of clay,
it's not relished even by the big barges of today.
Yeah. So you mentioned Commerce. So when I was reading, around 1800, there was a trading post established with the Osage, right on the bank of the river, but it wasn't called Commerce.
No.
You pronounce that for me, Tyler. You did it earlier. I'm just going to butcher it.
That would be Tawapiti.
Yeah. We hillbillies, we have much simpler terms where I'm from. Tawapiti, which is now Commerce. Now, as we're in Benton, right in the middle of the county. Where would Tawapiti be from here?
A hair to the north and mostly to the east of here.
Okay. So pretty much in line with Benton, but just toward the river.
It's where the hill drops off, which is about where Benton is. The hill's on the north end of the county, where those hills drop off and meet the river at the very east border of the county is where Tawapiti, now Commerce, is.
You know, Senator, it's so funny. People think that Scott County is just flats, and I'm like, no. It's got both. It's a lot like Butler County, where I'm from. You kind of go down the St. Francis, And on the east of the St. Francis, it's very flat. And on the west, it's very hilly. That you know when you're in the flatlands, when you come down that hill at Benton, but north of Benton, it's just as hilly as anywhere else.
You know, one thing that Scott County has going for it, unique to any other county in the United States, is where the north meets the south, because you drop off the Benton Hill, that starts in St. John's Bayou Basin, where Southern Living starts and you're removed from the north. Then on the east side of Scott County is the Mississippi River, so it definitely is where the north meets the south and the east meets the west.
Yeah. That is an interesting point. That is so true.
It really is, and there's a map of it right there, and that was our logo. When I was presiding commissioner here, we asked the CMO students to come up with a logo for us, and one of those actually developed that logo for us, and that's where that came from. And it's unique to any county in the United States. We're the only county
Really thought about that, but that is exactly right. Mississippi River, as everybody understands,
right?
You have to know the geography a little bit, but right. If you're from here, you know right where Boomland is, and you're in the flats. Right. But you head up that hill, you're in the hills.
You start the St. John's Bayou Basin right there at the base of the Benton Hill.
And there ain't a hill till the Gulf of Mexico.
That's right.
It's all downhill.
The Lord threw one in at Crowley's Ridge, but that's about it, right?
That's it.
So as I was reading, under the Spanish rule, there was a gentleman named Rezin Bowie, Jim Bowie's brother, who was the leader of that settlement, and kind of thing just progressed out from there, right? From commerce.
Correct.
Tell me, Tyler, how'd your family come to live here in Scott County?
So my family immigrated here from Germany 8 generations ago during the...
Happy Oktoberfest.
Same to you.
Yeah.
We came during the... they were Bavarian, so when Prussia was militarily uniting Germany, whether the rest of Germany wanted to be part of it or not, my family got out of Dodge and moved here and settled, made their way from the Carolinas west as land was more available to the house where I actually have just bought from my grandparents a few years ago, and being the fourth generation to own the family home and the family home place where I live now.
If you ever need anything from Eric Schmidt, start with that story about where your family came from. That'll hook him, no doubt, in my mind. Senator, how'd your family come live here in Scott County?
They come from the Luxembourg area, France, Germany area, kind of in that corner. They landed in Canada. We're the fifth generation. I'm the fifth generation. They landed in Canada, then Minnesota, and then ended up in Kelso, Missouri. And then that's kind of how they got here.
And Kelso is in the hills.
Kelso's in the hills.
Well, you got the Kelso has the Drurys. It's got Judge Gardner.
Yeah, that's
there's a whole rack of folks from Kelso.
Kelso,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kelso Coffee at the Drurys, if you ever stay there, that's what it's called.
I like that.
Kelso Coffee.
Kelso is where my family lives now, and a little colloquialism that my grandpa likes to say every once in a while is we and Kelso like to live on top of the hill so we can look down on everybody else.
Yeah, you got good stories about Tim you could tell?
About who?
Tim Drew.
I'm going to stay clear of that one for now.
he took a deep breath before he answered that. Alan, how'd your family come live here in Scott County?
Well, from what I can tell, it was, which is what happened with a lot of how this got populated, was a lot of Germans come over, and when they first entered our county, it was towards like the Mississippi County area, Texas Bend, and it was a lot of Catholics, and they just kind of dispersed from there, which, you know, we have 7 Catholic churches in the county, which for a smaller county is quite a few, I think, and you know, eventually just started forming those churches as they moved west and helped populate those communities.
Bill, how'd your family come to live here in Scott County?
Well, I followed my wife. This is all.
Good call.
About 20 years ago, I moved from St. Louis with her and down here.
I'm glad you got out.
It was her family's ground. I mean, she can tell you the rest of the story.
Bailey family, I assume, is Irish?
English.
English.
On my side, yeah. And she's in German, both. And then she's German heritage.
And Scott, her county heritage. Lived in St. Louis for 40 years. My family is originally from here. My great-grandparents built the house that we moved into. It was built in 1902 in Commerce. And they hail from all the great names of Southeast Missouri, the Hunters, the Moores, the Andersons, the Arnolds, I could just go on and on, Matthews, etc. They were all old relatives. Often joke that I know more people in the cemeteries than I do people that are living, because of living so much time in St. Louis. It just happened that old relatives passed away, and all that was left was my mom, my dad, and they inherited the house that was built by my great-grandparents, and they used it as a vacation house for all my growing up here. So I was here every month, even through teenage years, not wanting to be here. And then eventually my dad was getting too old, in his opinion, to take care of the house anymore.
Bill, he was waiting for a sucker to come and start working on the house, is what it was. And once I,
a good plan.
Once I said I do, then he's like, we're done with the house.
So Bill's our historic restorationist, and I dug into the thing of roots. I'm blessed in that our family was so highly researched, coming from all of those great names. I mean, I'm connected to Joseph Hunter, who was the first guy who was commissioned to come to New Madrid to be the first, I don't think they called him a governor back then. He was the first governor of the territory. The New Madrid earthquake hit, and he's like, what the heck am I doing here? I am now a commander of squirrels and buffalo. This is not why I'm here. So anyway, many, many generations, and that interest from just being family-centric, commerce-centric, expanded to interest in the entire county.
Does it? I love that story. I love that you spent the time to find all that out. The courthouse here is a real odyssey. This is one of the most interesting courthouse stories I've ever heard in my life. The first one was actually built here in Benton. Was Benton laid out to be the county seat, I guess?
You know, most county seats were developed for a horseback ride back and forth in the day's time to conduct business. That's why they're in the centers of the counties.
So you all had it here in the center. The Benton's about smack dab in the center, right?
Right.
About as close as you're going to get. And so they built a square courthouse here, and it lasted. The first one, they said, was not built that well and didn't last very long.
Exactly.
It went away quick. As commissioners and a clerk, I bet that just grinds your gears. Terrible to hear that. I've never met a clerk that was loose with money, and when something ain't done right, I just the teeth grinch and.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, the courthouse we're sitting in, I think, is the fifth one.
Yeah.
And I think the first several of them were that same situation. They just didn't meet the needs, or they weren't structurally built.
It looks like they got rid of that pretty quick.
Yes.
And then in 1884, they put a brick one together and replaced it. And that didn't work out and kind of went by the wayside. The third one was interesting. You know, they built that in 1855, which was a really bad time to be building stuff in southeast Missouri. And this is, I've never heard of this before, but they said in 1863, the state legislature, which would have been the one the federal government installed, right? It wouldn't have been the elected one. It would have been the one they said, well, you're the, the federal government's good at bossing Missourians around. It's funny, they would call that undemocratic today, but I guess however you want to call them, the legislature at the time, the appointed one, passed a law that moved the county seat. I've never heard of that done. Usually that's done because there's a vote in the county and it's a formality. The legislature is like, well, you put your county seat wherever you want. We don't care. They moved it to what was then Commerce. It wasn't that word I probably can't say, to escape the raids. I'd read where it was funny. There were two things about elections here. They'd moved the records of the county up to the military base in Cape. I also read the namesake of Scott County was the first congressman ever from here. He showed up to Washington and he was there for a year, and then they decided his election wasn't legitimate. So they sent him back. He had to go win another election. This time, I guess they just gave up and said, all right, fine, whatever. But they passed a law that moved it to Commerce. So they built what was a pretty plain brick building. You got one there?
Yeah, where is it?
Or is it that one?
No, it's this one.
Yeah, it's a pretty plain brick building, and I like how there's just a field around it. Nobody kept it up. They built that, and it lasted not all that long. The county voted in 1878. I wonder if they had to go pass another law and say, okay, this is now
I don't know.
Done.
I don't
but by know. Then, you know, they didn't really let Democrats or Confederates vote in 1864 or 6 or 8, and then nobody from the North got elected for a long, long time. So I'll bet by the time, by 1878, I'll bet that legislature was fully former Confederate soldiers, and they had no problem undoing that, if I had to guess.
I'd say you're probably right.
So they moved it back here to the 5th Courthouse, which was a grand building. The 5th one was, yeah, it was, I was reading about how that was put together. It was put together as a really beautiful building with a cupola. It cost them $11,000. And then one of my, this is a great story. So they built that, and it was a nice building that everybody liked. And so what I liked about this, though, they decided Greene County had built, everybody had to pass a bond for a courthouse. And so the story I was reading is that Greene County had done it out of general revenue because they were growing so fast. And after the Civil War, Scott County really took off growing. They had a thing where they were going to build the shell of the courthouse with general revenue money. But then they were going to finish it out, they had to pass a bond. And so I was reading how they had an essay contest. They had every school kid, and $10 was the prize. And it just so happened they announced the winner a week before the election. And the essay was, why should people vote for this $40,000 bond? And it just so happened that every school kid wanted $10 and also wrote why you should do this. So their parents, you know, had to put on the refrigerator or whatever it was at the time. And lo and behold, the next week was the election, and they voted to do a $40,000 bond by Henry Holzerschneid. I definitely butchered that name, even though it's German. He built the Berry, Christian, and Pemiscot County courthouses. Thought that was kind of a unique thing. They had built the shell of the building out of general revenue, but they needed to pass a bond to finish it out.
So the interior.
I figured they had them halfway in the bucket, right, both, so they might as well just come on in.
There's a courthouse similar to this somewhere in Iowa, too. The guy that actually built this built one in Iowa that's very similar to this. And I don't know which county it was, but there is one.
Well, and Hohenschild was known as the state architect. He was out of Raleigh, Jefferson City. Mm-hmm. He built courthouses all over the state. Cool thing is that each courthouse is unique and looks like what that particular county was envisioning for what they wanted.
Yeah, I've been to all those other courthouses, and I just Christian County a little bit, but you'd have to be looking for it. You really wouldn't know. I mean, if you didn't know, you would never think the same architect built both these structures. Mm-hmm. It's just it's there's a similarity there when you know, but if you don't know,
no.
And Pemiscot County is very different. It's you know, you wouldn't have no idea.
No.
I'll
share one story with you, Scott. Yeah. When we were remodeling this building up behind the vault in one of the judges' offices, we found a 1901 map, and it showed Blodgett, which was the watermelon capital of the world at the time, showed 8 railroads coming into Blodgett being loaded with melons, 80-pound melons, before they started making refrigerator melons. So can you imagine packing those all day onto railroad cars, carrying them, picking them out by the fields, putting them on railroad cars? Just think about that.
Well, I'm going to tell you my sob story. It ain't quite as bad as that. We used to pitch melons. That's in the summertime. We'd pitch hay and we'd pitch watermelons, which really wasn't that bad a job until someone broke one, and then the sweat bees would be everywhere. But an 80-pound watermelon.
80-pound melons.
What would you, I guess you'd have to just, you couldn't stack them that high, right? Because if one of them broke, you're out.
Right.
I don't know how you'd transport them around. My goodness.
Before you leave here today, make sure Alan takes you out there to get a picture of that map. I think it would be very interesting for people to see.
Absolutely. And Blodgett still does watermelons. I owe Judge Dolan a favor or a drink or something. He brought me one, and I mean, between me and Casey and Gussie, that thing, it lasted a full day, but it didn't make it to lunch the next day. Now, tell me, what is the season for them? When can you stop there at Minor and buy them, or wherever, Blodgett and buy them?
Usually just before the 4th of July.
And then when does it end?
It depends on the rains in the summer, which this year were not very forthgiving to us. But usually by about the second or third week of August.
Then it's about over?
Yeah. I mean, there'll still be melons out there, but as far as actually commercially picking them, it gets more expensive to hire the crew and expend the labor to pick those watermelons than it's worth, because they're getting smaller and having less moisture and then less sugar pumped into them. So you're getting a lesser value product and less of that product the later you go into the
season. This is just my ignorance, but do they still pick them by hand and pitch them on the thing and stack them?
Yep.
That's still how it's done. Huh. I guess I would have just thought someone would have. Hay baling has totally changed. I mean, there's nothing worse than hay baling, and you're just allergies. And I got old enough to where I would tell people, no, I wouldn't. But they'd call my dad, and I'd have to go. But hay baling has changed. I mean, they're all mostly round. I mean, you can get some square bales.
Absolutely.
I would say 95% of them are round bales wrapped. But still, watermelons, kids can still find work in the summer pitching melons.
Yes, sir.
Like I said, I like pitching melons until somebody broke one. And then, you know, there's nothing worse than sweat bees everywhere.
Oh, I know.
I mean, you can't get away from them either.
Nope.
You try to go, they'll just trail you around with that broken watermelon. And it's always on our crew. If you'd break one, I'd be like, well, just eat this one, guys. They try to make it better, but it was never better. Because
Right. Then
you get it on your hands. And I'm done with my stories of, whoa, let's talk about the Civil War. Jay Nixon had this interesting thing. He said every county where it was 50-50, somehow their history says they were Union counties. He goes, there's not that many counties. Like Jefferson County was a Confederate county. Because whatever St. Louis was, Jefferson County is always the opposite, whatever they can do to differentiate. St. Louis is very Union. But Scott County, I think it's fair to say, was a predominantly Confederate county. Is that right? Mm. Especially south of the hill, right?
50-50. It genuinely is. I mean, that's a big curiosity of mine personally, because in my own personal history, half of my family were slave owners, the other half were merchants, and it seemed to go that way. If you were into agriculture and you had big farms and need for lots of labor, then you were Southern sympathy. Most business people, people that depended on the river, people in commerce, those guys were Union-oriented. And so the families even intermarried, my family in particular did that, where a Northerner married a Southerner.
Well, notice you have a lot of German names here. Germans were against slavery, by and large.
That's what I was going to add. I mean, like Senator Berger said, where the North meets the South, and that's very true for Scott County, because when Alan was talking about all the German churches, of those Catholic churches, five of them are German Catholic churches in the north end of the county.
Very much Northerners.
In 1848, there had been an attempted revolution in Germany. And then when early German settlers came here, a big reason why Germans were anti-Civil War is we just got out of a country that had a revolution. We don't want to come to a country and then have to fight another one.
And plus, most of the German folks, you know, Germans hills.
Right.
And they raised cattle and pigs. They were not row crop farmers.
That's right. That's right. The north end of the county still is much more livestock intensive than the southern end of the county. And the north end of the county was subsistence farmers. We farm to feed ourselves, feed our families, and have some extra to sell. Versus the south end of the county now today is still almost entirely row crop to where, I mean, like we said, it was where the north met the south.
Well, it is interesting where Bolivar, Rolla, where there were major Union depots, the local folks did business with them, right? And so the Union Army was a boon to Rolla and Bolivar, and in some ways Cape, because where you had all those men, they needed to buy it, they needed to eat. Mm-hmm. Lots of folks became rich selling things to the Union Army, but it was kind of where the railroad stopped was Rolla and Bolivar, and so that's where the Union went as far as they could, their supply line would go, and they kind of camped out. And you found they're pretty, you know, much Union, but it's interesting. I guess it is where the North meets the South. That's a good anecdote.
Well, commerce had the mercantiles, and they would just have a flag for whichever riverboat was landed to pick up the wood, because primarily the farmland was cleared for cordwood.
Yeah.
And then back in Civil War days, that's what they were dealing in.
That's about right. Yeah, just whatever flag they had, you just pull yours down, put the new one up. Because I did see, like, a place like New Hamburg, I figured did not have any Confederate sympathizers. That's a New Hamburg is the reason it was named that. And the Germans were very much pro-Union. I did read where the Scott County men registered in the 13th Cavalry and the 29th Infantry on the Union side, and there was a lot of Scott County men registered in the 8th Cavalry on the Confederate side. But it was interesting. I don't know if it was the proximity to Cape or What? But there was no major battles fought here in Scott County. Just tons of skirmishing, it looked like.
Lots of skirmishes, and it became so dangerous to even live in Commerce that most of the people moved across the river to Burnham Island, set up a shanty town over there while the skirmishes were going on in their community. So it was intense, and even today, you can go up into the hills behind Commerce in the woods, and you can find cannonballs, swords, bullets, whatever. Our boys found a cannonball a few years ago, and it's like, oh, what's this? Oh, wow. You know.
We found one over by Donovan, and we kids, and we really thought this thing could blow up. Like, in our mind, we thought it was like Wile E. Coyote, you know, how you'd hear the cannonball. I guess, and finally, my grandpa put a drill through. He goes, there's no gunpowder in this thing. You know, the gunpowder was behind the thing. Yeah. Shot. It's like, this is the bullet. But we really thought we were carrying it real careful, thinking we'd really come upon something that could blow up. Mm-hmm. It didn't. But when you talk about where the North meets the South, I guess there's no truer part of it than that. That's true today and true 160 years ago, you know. We want to take a minute to thank our sponsors, Missouri Farm Bureau, Missouri Association of Counties, and the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, letting us come to places like Scott County and see exactly where the East meets the West and the North meets the South. We'll take a break. We'll come right back and talk about Scott County today here on Showing Missouri, History of Missouri, one county at a time.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the Missouri way of life. We're for worrying less about the what-ifs and more about the why-nots. We're for checking off your bucket list and then making a new one. For starting a family, a business, a tradition. And if you find yourself starting over, we're here for that too. We're for building a life in Missouri and then going out and living it. And when it comes to making sure everything you've built is protected, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance.
The Show Me Missouri podcast is brought to you by our friends at HALO, Heartland Area Landowners. HALO is a membership-based organization for folks interested in farming the sun and the wind. HALO members are passionate about their land, our world, and stewarding the resources that feed America, power, and its economy. Farming the sun and wind has incredible benefits for farmers, landowners, and all Missouri communities, all while helping secure America's energy independence. To learn more about HALO and how you can get involved, visit heartlandowners.farm. That's heartlandowners.farm.
Welcome back to Showing Missouri, the History of Missouri, one county at a time. We are in Scott County. And if after that part, you'll understand why it is where the East meets the West, and especially where the North meets the South. Tyler Bruns with Farm Bureau, thank you for sticking with us. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
We have some local historians, the Bailey family, Bill and Susan. Thank you all for staying with us.
Glad to be here.
Senator Jamie Berger, thank you so much for the hospitality. I love the Cardinal shirt.
Even though we're out of the playoffs, still a Cardinal fan.
Miserable. If there was an eighth circle of hell, we'd be in it. It is awful.
We're not used to losing.
No, and I don't take it well, and it really affects my mental health in a significant way. Alan Seaball, the county clerk, thank you so much for letting us be here in this very historic building. We appreciate it. Built by the citizens of Scott County and the children's essays of Scott County, putting the guilt trip on their parents. Senator, you were obviously the commissioner for a long time. You mentioned you'd renovated this while you were here.
We did. We put all the new roofs on the top. And we also renovated the interior during that time. We passed a bond issue to build the new jail, which will be forever known as the new jail until we build another jail. At the same time, we promised the citizens that we would remodel the courthouse, and we did that.
But I like how there's a, and maybe it's as simple as the signage and the trim. It is maintained. It's got a historic feel to it still.
Very much so. We have no spitting in the corners, scuff marks on the floors. We still got an old phone booth out here. So we kind of left the old Farm Bureau thermometer. You know what I mean? Just a lot of those things. We want to make sure that we preserve the quality of the building.
I'll even add, we're doing some history research lately for various reasons. And I found the blueprints of the interior of the building. And there's elements of that we still see, even though some of it we've had to update, obviously for security reasons, to be more modern. There are still elements that you find that were in those blueprints from 1912.
You have to have remodeled. It's got to have plumbing. It's got to have heat and air. But when you walk down the hallway here on the first floor, it still feels like you're in a historic building. And that's something that had to be intentional.
One guy told me the only difference between the courthouse today, he's an older gentleman, and years ago, used to, when you come in, you smell cigar smoke and whiskey. We don't smell that anymore.
Well, not everything's improved, but, you know. You mentioned where the railroad connected, right in the 1900s. Tell me, there's a photograph here, Susan, you brought of what looks like the pylon to build the Thieves Bridge.
Correct.
Tell me about that.
Oh, that's a sordid story.
It's our favorite kind.
That was when the railroads were just coming on. Steamboats were king of the river. And right where the Thieves Bridge is built, there's a slight curve to the river. And Lewis Houck, who was instrumental in building that bridge, he had them build the bridge right on that curve. What it does even today is this barge is going, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, up or down river.
Down river.
Down river. They have to put their engines into reverse to avoid the pylons and to make that curve, making it difficult for the boats, steamboats and otherwise, to make it up and down the river in that section.
Why did they do that?
So that it was more difficult to ship your goods by boat, and you would be more apt to ship it by railroad.
That's pretty smart. I mean, I got a little dirty, but that is smart.
Very shrewd. It was even more heated than that with legal issues and whatever, but I won't bore you with that. But I love the story of just that they configured that bridge right in that spot.
Pretty smart. I got to hand it to him. You mentioned, Jamie, how many railroads came into Blodgett?
I think it was 8 railroads came into Blodgett during the watermelon season to be loaded and shipped all over the country.
I mean, you only got 6 to 8 weeks to get them from when they arrive to get them out, right?
Mm-hmm.
You make hay while make watermelon while the sun shines, I guess, in that case. Tell me about today, Senator. Where do folks work at in Scott County?
You know, Scott County is kind of a bedroom community. We have 40,000 people, but we have our retail opportunities are very limited, very limited. So most people work in Cape and New Madrid counties. We kind of sit in between the two of those. If you look at their sales tax revenues versus our sales tax revenues, theirs are a whole lot higher. Ours are based on people owning vehicles mainly, drives our sales tax.
Well, you can't talk about sales tax without talking about Sykeston. The most interesting sales tax story, I think, in state history.
Walmart.
Is you have Walmart. Sykeston straddles mostly Scott County with where the people live, but the retail area straddles the county line. And I remember when I was mayor, this became a thing of Poplar Bluff. They built the Walmart, which in a rural town is 20% of your revenue, right?
Right.
Probably not quite as much today, but by then, like wherever the Walmart is in Poplar Bluff, that's where the city, if there's a fire truck in Poplar Bluff, it's paid for. That money passes through Walmart to get there. It ended up being built in New Madrid County, but nobody knew it, right? They just assumed it was in Scott County, right?
Well, we had it in Scott County. Then when it moved, it was built in New Madrid County, but the tax revenues kept coming to Scott County. So at some point in time, somebody finally, in New Madrid County, I think it was probably Clyde Halls, who was the presiding commissioner, said, how come we're not receiving any Walmart revenues? That's when they dug deeper and found out that we were still collecting the money here in Scott County, so we had to pay them back.
Whew. I mean, how much was the...
I think it was $425,000 at that time.
So you caught it kind of early then?
Early, probably about 2 years into the game.
Man, that went on much longer. That would have been a lick.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is interesting how there's that whole retail area that is in New Madrid County, and then, of course, the Cape County. But when you see folks, let's just say north of Benton in the hills, are they primarily folks that work in Cape and live there?
You know, we kind of always felt like the Marley was kind of the defining line there. Everybody from Marley, Orang goes south. Everybody from goes north towards Cape to do their shopping. And that's kind of the way it's been historically. Not everybody all the time, but that's kind of the way it was laid out.
Yeah. Southern of the county, highly agricultural.
Very agricultural, very much so. Like he said earlier, mostly crops, very few animals anymore. Yet in the north part of the county, we still raise cattle and hogs and row crops at the same time.
Alan, tell about the schools. Where folks go to school here in Scott County?
We have We have seven schools, public schools, and we have several parochial schools, so that make up the county. We do have one school, Kelso C7, is only an elementary or pre-K through 8 school. So those students have about 5 options once they get to ninth grade of where they can go to a neighboring district. We have quite a few schools because most of our Catholic churches, which we've already discussed, we have several, also have a parochial school. So that's really added those up.
So what tell me about the parochial school. Where is that? Where is the parochial schools at?
Well, there's one in Benton, mm-hmm. Kelso at St. Augustine, St. Joseph, which is in Scott City, St. Ambrose is in Chaffee, Guardian Angels in Orion, and then in the south end, St. Francis Xavier has an elementary school as well.
Elementaries.
Is there a Christian Academy too in Sykeston?
There's at least one Christian Academy in Sykeston as well.
So walk me through, Sykeston's rival is who?
I'd say, I think it depends on the sport, maybe. You think Charleston?
Give me football.
Charleston would be a good rival with Sykeston.
But is Sykeston, what is Sykeston, 4A?
Probably about.
I'd say so.
Charleston's got to be 2 or 3A, right?
Two probably now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is Sykeston Cape thing's always a big game, too, naturally.
Yes.
Naturally.
Cape Central?
Cape Central. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike Jensen, you remember Mike Jensen. Mm-hmm. He's the principal of Christian Fellowship.
Okay.
School.
So when what? So you guys would be a 4A then playing. Was Cape Central 5A?
5A. Hmm.
But the Charleston game's got to still be fun, right? I mean, that's.
And even the Sykeston Dexter thing's a big game too.
Yeah, Dexter's been pretty good recently.
Real good.
They
real
were
good.
Kind of a doormat right. for a long time, but they've upped their game. All right, what about Benton? Who's Benton's rival? I guess it's a basketball rival, I assume.
Be Kelly High School. Yeah. Be Orion, Scott City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I think. Those are fun. Those 2A basketball rivalries are chippy and mean and mm-hmm. fun.
And you actually, know what I mean? Notre Dame High School, when we played for Kelly, Notre Dame was a big rival for us, too.
Has Notre Dame picked up and got bigger? Or?
I'd say it's, you know, from what I understand, about 400 kids maybe are in it.
Oh, is that all?
I'm a graduate of Notre Dame. Okay. And so all these parochial Catholic schools in any of the three surrounding counties around Cape County, and even some as far as from Bluff, from Butler.
Oh, yeah,
County.
I think Southern I Illinois. People,
yeah, several, there's a busload that comes from Southern Illinois. Those are all, they call them the feeder schools that yeah. all go into Notre Dame as a regional high school.
It's a pretty successful school, right? I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And on the trajectory to getting bigger, right?
I'm the third generation of my family that's
right?
gone there. All in Cape the whole time.
All right. Tell when we're talking about this, we talk about the schools. You talk about the history of the county. You know, Scott County to me has always been your pretty typical county that was very, very Democrat from the Civil War on through the New Deal, and started kind of changing a little bit politics in the 80s with Reagan, and then federally with Emerson, and now probably with Trump as red as any place in the state, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at our election results, the last several elections, that's the case. And I believe it was in 2016, whenever mm-hmm. the first county office switched over, I believe with Wes Drury beating Rick Walter for sheriff. And from then it was a domino effect. Every 2 years when county offices were up for election, they've switched over. And at this point, there's no Democratic office holders.
Scott County was a lagging part, though.
Very much.
The other counties had switched even at the courthouse level. Scott County I guess where the North meets the South.
Yes.
It was here south that until Trump, it was still, at the courthouse level, pretty Democrat.
Absolutely. You know, that happened in Cape, you know, several years before, talking like 20, 30 years, because you had the Limbaughs and the Kinders and different ones, and the county switched over.
Butler County was
sooner.
The same way. Butler County switched early. Not quite as early as Cape, but pretty close.
Yeah.
The interesting part, you go around this state and you look at when the political realignment happened, really this was an enclave. There's a little strip from like Marshall, Warrensburg, not as much Sedalia, but a little bit Sedalia. They were about on the same track as the Boot Hill. They were still Democrats, even if it was just at the county level. I just don't see that the people have changed much. The national parties have
shifting.
You know, and I think too, when you get your, you know, we get a lot more national news, we get local news anymore. I just don't think the folks in Scott County are that much different than they've always been. Just the national parties have switched up what they do, and they've kind of slowly corresponded a little bit.
I agree with that. And I think what you hear a lot of people say, especially office holders that were Democrat and have switched to Republican, they'll say that the party left them, they didn't leave the party. You know, that's the comment a lot.
Some of the absolute best legislators in Jeff City are people that were, even if they weren't elected Democrats, they would have said it parts, you know, a large part of my life I was a Democrat. Now I'm a Republican. Most of those people I don't think have changed a lick. It's just simply, you know, they have a different view of different partisan view. Most of that's national more than local. Let's talk about some of the I'll tell you what, you have a really cool list of people that I've found, and I bet y'all can add to this, notable folks from Scott County. I do like talking about the Senate president. You mentioned the Hunters. One of the first Senate presidents in 1838 was Abram Hunter, and that led to a great line of Hunters that were in the state Senate and very notable folks. Then the speaker, the House Speaker from here was Nathaniel Watkins. He was a former Confederate general, and he founded Morley, Missouri. That boy lived a life. Senator Maida Coleman, a former minority leader. She got elected in St. Louis, but she's from Sykes. And Peter Myers is somebody who I always looked up as when I was just Mayor of Poplar Bluff. You knew someone significant was in the room when Peter, he didn't have to brag or chest thump. You just knew somebody that was a big deal was here. You know what I mean? That's what Peter always struck me as. Peter he carried himself like an important guy because he had done big things, you know. Neil Boyd, I met Neil Boyd before. A singer, won a national competition and sang around. Then James Wilder, the Sykeston Train, holds a bunch of records here in Sykeston and at Mizzou. Took Mizzou to three straight bowl games. Lawrence Taylor said he was the toughest running back he ever ran against. Who am I missing, being from Scott County?
We have Otto Porter.
Otto.
That is, very well known, you know, at this point.
Yeah, he's still playing in the NBA, right?
I'm not sure about that.
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an awesome thing. All right, the last question I'd like to thank, before I like to always want to thank our sponsors, the Farm Bureau, the Missouri Association of Counties, and the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops. Let us come to a place like Scott County and talk about things like the Thebes Bridge and why it's located where it's located, because Mr. Houck was a shrewd and some would say ruthless businessman. Alan, if you had somebody come into town, where would you take him in Scott County? What would you have him know?
Well, I'm conflicted on that. You know, I take a lot of pride in the courthouse here in the history, and I also take a lot of pride where I go to church, which is Guardian Angel at Orion. You know, I discussed about how the people from Germany came here, and actually, we have a church at Orion that is, you know, much more beautiful than any other church around here. You know, there's a lot of people that say that. And the reason that is we had a priest in the late 1800s, early 1900s that had very wealthy parents from St. Louis, and he was able to use that money to help build the church. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been as grandiose as it is. You know, it would not have been able to happen, but he used his own money to do that. And it's had, a lasting impact on the area. And then, of course, the courthouse here I take a lot of pride in and look forward to finding new history every time I try to look through the files.
Every time you look behind the door, right?
Yes, absolutely. So,
Ms. Susan, where would you take somebody here in Scott County? What would you show them?
Oh, well, the riverfront is just really cool. A great spot to picnic. An amazing spot just to see Scott County through all the ages. You look back towards those Commerce Hills and you can almost see the Indian chief from the Osage sitting on one of those hills watching what was transpiring. DeSoto landed there, Lewis and Clark landed there. I mean, the riverfront is just an amazing. In fact, we had a little friend of our daughter's visit from Japan, and she still comes back to see the Mississippi. It still impacts her.
That's a great story. I like that.
Yeah, it's about the river for me. So,
Bill, where would you take somebody here in Scott County?
It'd be Commerce. It's supposedly the only place between St. Louis and New Orleans that doesn't have a levee between what's left of the town. Mm-hmm. And so you come into town, you see the river. There's a winery about 4 miles up the road. That's how we usually do it. We just didn't tell people about the history. If the river's down, we'll walk them out to the petroglyph because the river has to be real low to see that. And that takes you back to, you can stand there and look over. And it's just trees. The, you know, the town across the river went out years ago, flooded out. And so, except for one or two houses, it's just like looking in the, in back in time.
I didn't know that. So there's no levee between the town and the river?
Mm-mm. No.
Hmm. Did 93 hit it, or?
Oh, 93. It was probably 200 plus residents.
Yeah.
And 95 was still the same, but then they took the buyout in 95 and left us with a lot of vacant lots.
Yeah. Parklands.
Yeah, parkland. Yeah, it's a park.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to put that. Tyler, where would you take somebody here?
Well, I'd start at my farm, at my family home place that I'm the fourth generation to farm. The owner of the house before my great-grandparents, the state moved the road, and he decided he didn't want that long of a driveway to keep up. And it was an old German T-style farmhouse built up on stone stilts. So he went into the woods across the road and cut down poplar trees, limbed them up so they were just long, straight logs, stuck them under the house, knocked the stilts out, and rolled it with all the neighbor's mules that he could get, and rolled it to where my house sits today. Unfortunately, when they put the stilts back under the house, they didn't have a level. So the east end of my house is 8.5 inches lower than the west end of my house.
That's perfect.
I mean, the whole thing leans. But
if
from
you got
there,
a baseball you want to send, you can just take
that's
roll
right.
it down the
road. That's right. From there, though, we'd get on 55, and somebody that's never been to Scott County before, we have to go to Lambert's. I mean, you have to go to the Throat Rollers.
Yep.
But in the meantime, from my house in Kelso to Lambert's, you can see the difference in the trees and the cattle, the hay and the corn and soybeans in the north end. Drop down that hill and drive past cotton fields and rice fields in the south end on your way to Lambert's. And I think
that is true.
A great way to really emphasize the difference in this county.
To take it all in, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for having me. Thank you for the visit. And Al, thank you so much for having us here at this
Absolutely.
Historic building. I want to thank you all for joining us here on Show Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time. This is Scott County. We will see you next week from New Madrid County here. See you then.
Way down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining high.